the criminal genocidal forces like the United States of America, or with the decent people who are defending humanity, like the Iranians, the Yemenis, the Syrians, the Iraqis, that kind of people. And we can see in the globe, from South Africa to Ireland, there is a lot of forces who's gathered together to support the Palestinians. Let the ruling elite aside, those people are controlled by multinationals who always make the money out of the suffering of the people of the world.
Okay. This is understandable. On that note, so sorry to interrupt you. On that note, we're out of time. Appreciate both of you being with us. Saeb Shath, author and West Asia expert out of Belfast. Yves Engler, author and political activist out of Montreal. Thank you for being with us on Another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنبَتَتْ سَبْعَ سَنَابِلَ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنبَتَتْ سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hamas resistance movement says Palestinians' priority is to stop Israel's brutal aggression against Gaza and complete withdrawal of the occupation forces. The heads of several UN bodies warn that cutting off funding to the Palestinian Refugee Agency will have catastrophic consequences for the people of Gaza. And Iran pledges a decisive response to any attack on its soil and interests amid U.S. retaliation threats over a weekend drone strike on its base in Jordan. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Top story. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says any deal with Israel must stop the brutal aggression on Gaza and result in the complete withdrawal of occupation forces from the Palestinian territory. Hamas Political Bureau Chief Ismail Haniyeh said the movement is open to negotiations, but an agreement must include an end to the Israeli siege as well as a genuine prisoner exchange. He made the remarks in reaction to a new ceasefire proposal put forward after talks in Paris. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement said it would not engage in any prisoner exchange deal without a comprehensive ceasefire and Israel's withdrawal from Gaza. Palestinian Red Crescent in Gaza says Israeli forces have stormed Al-Amal Hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis, where displaced people are taking shelter. The Palestinian Red Crescent says Israel forces also asked the people inside the hospital to evacuate. It says one civilian was killed after troops besieged the complex. Hamas has called the attack a new act of massacre and war crime committed by Israel. Separately, the regime's airstrike hit a residential building in the central Gaza city of Deir al-Bala, killing at least 11 people, including several kids. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza says the total death toll has passed 27,700 since the war began in early October. Most of those killed are women and children. Over 65,600 Palestinians have been injured as well. Several UN agencies have warned about the catastrophic consequences of a decision by some countries to cut funding to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA. In a joint statement, the heads of multiple UN bodies described the halt of UNRWA funding as perilous, cautioning that it will lead to the collapse of the humanitarian system in Gaza. The group said such a collapse will have far-reaching humanitarian and human rights consequences in the occupied Palestinian territory and across the region. Earlier, the UN aid coordinator for Gaza stressed the great capacity of UNRWA in delivering and distributing aid across the Strip. Zigrid Cog said no other organization can replace or substitute UNRWA, considering the agency's ability and its knowledge of the population in Gaza. Political commentator Scott Bennett is joining us now from San Francisco. Mr. Bennett, welcome to the program. First of all, if you may share with us your initial reaction when you heard the decision to cut funding for UNRWA at this point in time.
Well, it shows us two things. Number one, we see a premeditated political, psychological attack by the Israelis and certain allies to shut down a UN aid agency claiming to have opposition ties or terrorist ties or whatever that is. But more importantly, what it shows by this political attack and of course no evidence behind it, is that Israel's primary strategy is to cause as much suffering, devastation, and misery as it possibly can in the Gaza territory, so that in 6 months to a year, things have decayed and descended so abysmally that then Israel can steal the northern part of the land and the access points to the gas fields in the Mediterranean, while the world then steps in and provides miraculous water and food to these people that at 6 months from now will be like skeletons. So that's Israel's strategy, is to create this black hole of misery that it can then use to detach itself and distract the world from when it does some other operations, which may include attacks on Lebanon and stuff. But the second thing it shows us is it's a perfect opportunity for the other world's nations to step in to the vacuum that UNRWA's suspension has created and provide the water, the bread, the food, the medicine, the tents, the sleeping bags, the children's toys, provides the basic necessities from Russia, Iran, Turkey, China, Saudi Arabia, maybe one of the other, Indonesia, any of the general nations that have ships or have a passion, can play a role in a humanitarian mission to Gaza that I've said is the best and the only thing that'll save the Palestinians.
Well, Mr. Bennett, several UN agencies have warned about the dire repercussions and catastrophic consequences of this decision to cut the funding by some countries. They've stated that the humanitarian situation would go beyond repair, basically, and it would have unspeakable repercussions. If you may unpack that for us as well.
Well, we've just laid it out that in 6 months, as bodies decay, as weather goes bad and the environment becomes toxic, as disease spreads of every form of skin disease and rashes, cancers and filth and cholera and all sorts of plagues and leprosy and things like that, those will break out. And this is what they are identifying, is the common math, the social devolution that occurs when you take life-preserving civilization out of the lives and the structures and the systems of people. And that's what the Israelis are systematically doing, strategically and tactically, coordinating diplomatic information warfare to political warfare to match their kinetic aggression. And they are using the United States. They're going to try and bring the United States in to strike Iran, which I don't think it'll do. I think they'll strike some little rocks or mountains in Syria or Iraq. But the United States and the American people are not going to attack Iran, and they're not going to create a war with Iran. they would go to war against Israel. And I think the majority of the American people are waking up to that. And they have other things on their mind besides the southern border and the civil war that's about to kick off in the United States. Make no mistake, the next year will be the most violent year in the history of the United States of America. But after this civil war, you will have a conservative regime that will be replacing this endless war regime we've had for 20 years. And you really will see a renaissance in America, I'm convinced. There are more good people who believe like I do and share what we share on Press TV in this relationship of intellectual exchange. There are more people like that in America than there are the John Boltons and the Lindsey Grahams and the Obamas and Bidens and even Trumps. So however that goes is another matter, but the American people are rising up. This thing that's happened in Gaza, this thing that's happened to the Palestinians, and the terror that's going to be inflicted in the next 6 months, if the world doesn't stand up and intervene through providing humanitarian mission materials, that's what's so simple about this, is the world's nations have a perfect justification to come in and say, we're not going to allow the humanitarian life-sustaining materials to be cut off from these people. We're not going to commit murder. And that's what we would be doing if we starved them to death, if we dehydrated them, if we didn't provide them a basic medicine. We are leaving them in a dungeon and letting them die. And who does that? No one that is blessed by God and no one that is a decent nation or people that even deserves to exist. No one deserves to exist who would do this to another person, to the Palestinians. And you're seeing Americans and Canadians and Brits and Germans and Scandinavians and Australians have massive rallies in the streets and passionate, exuberant expressions of people in bays in Australia, ships and sea-doos and little boats stopping ships from leaving Australia, going to Israel.
Scott Bennett, political commentator, joining us from San Francisco. Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Kuwait has been calling on the international community to take a strong position on the ongoing Israeli aggression against the Palestinian people. This urgent plea was voiced during an emergency Arab League meeting in Cairo, with further support reiterated in the Kuwaiti parliament. We have this report.
In a display of solidarity, 36 members out of 50 in the Kuwaiti National Assembly have called on the government to urgently convene a session of the United Nations Human Rights Council. The aim is to address the ongoing atrocities in the Gaza Strip, a move driven by Kuwait's strong support for Palestine in the wake of the recent ruling by the International Court of Justice on Israeli genocide in Gaza. In light of growing concerns about the genocide committed by Israel in Gaza, Kuwaiti lawmakers have underscored the urgent necessity to address the suffering inflicted by Israel.
Kuwait's position has not changed since the beginning. That's why Kuwait has now asked for an urgent humanitarian session in the Human Rights Council because of what Israel is committing in Palestine. Kuwait has not yet led the way to file a lawsuit, but instead has given documented evidence against Israel to South Africa. The International Court of Justice decision is a first step toward a world that sees Israel as a criminal, not a victim.
A coalition of Kuwaiti and Arab lawmakers has proposed assisting South Africa in safeguarding Palestinians against war crimes. They affirmed Kuwait's steadfast solidarity with global advocacy for Palestinian rights and justice.
The judgment of the International Court of Justice against Israel has shown the world that Israel is committing a crime, but the judges did not make any concrete demands. That is why our Kuwaiti ambassador to the UN is working towards a conviction against Israel. We don't want the world to get used to the scenes in Gaza. Also, what made things worse was the U.S. decision to cut donations to UNRWA. This is an inhumane step by the U.S.
The Kuwaiti proposed initiative seeks to mobilize international support for Palestine while holding Israel accountable for its actions in Gaza. It underscores Kuwait's unwavering commitment to upholding human rights principles. This united stance displays Kuwait's determination to confront injustice and support the oppressed. It also serves as a strong message to the international community that there should be no impunity for those who commit crimes against humanity.
Kuwait's robust backing for Palestine is evident across different sectors in the country. And the new government here in Kuwait has prioritized actions against the atrocities that are taking place in Gaza by the Israelis. This is Farah Al-Hashim, Kuwait City.
A protest organized by the Campaign Against the Arms Trade has taken place outside the venue of a meeting of arms dealers in the British capital, London. The protesters slammed the British arms companies, MPs and military personnel participating in the gathering for their complicity in the unfolding genocide in Gaza. Let's take a listen to what some of the protesters had to say.
The Campaign Against the Arms Trade is a very necessary group who keep track on all of the arms deals that are going on, because a lot of them are done in secret, and the government is very complicit in it. It profits from it. You know, the UK is one of the major players. It always supports the US, which is the major player, so I personally think that it's disgusting. How long does it have to take that all of these people are being killed? And you're arming an army against a people. You know, those people are not even allowed to have an army. So it is extremely sick.
We feel very strongly that about the fact that companies are profiting from the death and destruction and the loss of civilian life that we're seeing daily in Gaza. We've seen, I can't tell you the number of war crimes I've seen committed against innocent people. Everybody can see it on social media. We see children maimed, we see children made homeless, you know, in the most horrific and the most barbaric ways imaginable. And it's obscene and unconscionable that governments and that companies are profiting from this, from the sale of weapons and weapons technology, and this country is complicit in that. There are many companies, BAE Systems, Elbit Systems, who are providing the components, the drones, the technology for the F-35s and the bombs that are killing people, and our government is supporting this and supporting this genocide. So we feel very, very strongly that our voices must be heard, and that we should all be, everybody in this country needs to be aware of the role that the government in this country is playing in supporting this genocide, and everybody should be speaking out about it and opposed to it, because it's unbelievable that our government is part of this and actually supporting it.
Israeli undercover forces have carried out a deadly attack on a hospital in the occupied West Bank, killing three Palestinians. The troops, disguised as medical staff and women, stormed the Ibn Sina Hospital in the city of Jenin. Israel has claimed that the victims had ties to Hamas. The hospital officials say the young men were assassinated while they were asleep following the raid. A general strike was announced in Jenin. The Palestinian Health Ministry has also called on the United Nations to stop Israel's daily string of crimes against Palestinian people and health centers. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry described it as a heinous crime against humanity. Hamas has denounced the attack, too, saying that it won't go unpunished. Iran has strongly condemned what it called the barbaric act, saying that it could pave the way for the normalization of organized terrorism in the world. Iran's permanent representative and ambassador to the United Nations has warned that the Islamic Republic would decisively respond to any attack on the country, its interests, and nationals. Amir Saidi Ravani said it's the fundamental policy of Iran to give a strong response to enemies in case of an attack. The statement came after U.S. President Joe Biden told reporters that he has made a decision on how to respond to Sunday's deadly drone attack on an American base in Jordan. Biden did not blame Iran for the attack, but said he holds Tehran responsible for supplying weapons to the group that had claimed responsibility for the attack. Iran has already denied its involvement, calling the U.S. accusation baseless. Iran says resistance forces in the region are not under its control and therefore is not responsible for their actions. A senior Yemeni official has dismissed U.S. threats to intensify attacks on the country in response to its anti-Israel operations in the Red Sea in support of Gaza. Mohammad Ali al-Houthi, a senior member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, said the U.S. has sent threatening messages through Oman, he warned the United States against any adventurism, saying that all threats against the Yemeni people are doomed to failure, with the added that no move by the enemy will deter the Yemeni people from implementing their mission in support of the people of Gaza. The Yemeni army has been targeting Israeli-operated or Israeli-bound vessels in the Red Sea over the past several weeks in response to the regime's genocide in Gaza. It has been also targeting American and British ships in retaliation for the U.S.-UK aggression against Yemen. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
in the limelight.
The turn of events in recent months amid the Zionist regime genocidal war on the Gaza Strip has demonstrated to the world the awe-inspiring bravery and heroism of the Yemeni government and its military. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Press TV wrote, "Identity from a political perspective refers to self-awareness in the mirror of interaction with others. This identity enables the basic political distinction between friends and enemies. According to this interpretation, political actors shape their foreign policy based on the friend-enemy dimension. First, we need to discuss the revolutionary nature of Iran. The fall of the Pahlavi regime in Iran, which had been in power from 1925 until 1979, and the subsequent victory and establishment of the Islamic Republic marked the success of a revolutionary ideology vital for understanding the significance of the anti-colonial and anti-hegemonic vision upon which Iran bases its foreign policy. Due to this revolutionary ideology, resistance against those powers deemed hegemonic is considered a political military obligation." Another fundamental element to understanding the identity of the Islamic Republic is the Islamic dimension, which is the main element upon which the revolutionary ideology is based. It includes embracing the idea of Muslim unity propounded by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic, and bringing the gap between Sunni and Shia. It includes embracing the idea of Muslim unity propounded by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic, and bridging the gap between Sunni and Shia. In other words, the goal is to assert that Islam is a common language that enables Muslims to interact and debate among themselves. Another element is building a just society, which is an ethical political aspiration that lies at the heart of the Islamic ideology. It calls on Muslims to tirelessly struggle against oppression in all its forms. From the Islamic political perspective expressed by the Islamic Republic of Iran, it sees the world as a confrontation between justice and oppression. When defining the main factors that articulate the identity of Ansarullah, it is necessary to analyze the widespread idea that treats the group in a particular way and Yemen in a general sense as a tribal society based on ethnic diversity and without a national identity. This type of analysis assumes that the nation-state is a privileged element when defining and identifying political identities. From this kind of reductionism, it is not possible to understand either the Iranian Islamic identity or the political affinities between Ansarullah and the Islamic Republic. That being said, for Ansarullah, one of its historical identities is what the group refers to as an Arab identity. This identity, in turn, is mediated by Islamist discourse, a political discourse that allows for various articulations. It is precisely this Islamist discourse that explains the convergence between Iran and Ansarullah. The Yemeni group sees Islam as a discourse of liberation against colonial oppression, both internal and external, as well as against the presence of countries considered oppressors and aliens in the region. This political convergence highlights the inadequacy of explanations that seek to portray the collaboration between Tehran and Sana'a solely in terms of Shia religious affiliations. This essentialist reductionism fails to consider the political dimensions of Islam, understood as discourse. The political affinity between Ansarullah resistance movement and Iran becomes even more apparent when considering the revolutionary ideology of the Yemeni group. Since its origins in 1990s, the group has embraced the doctrine of Velayat-e-Faqih, or the system introduced by Imam Khomeini and its cornerstone of the current Islamic Republic as a political ethical guide for its actions in the political arena. In the post-9/11 era and the so-called War on Terror by the US regime, Ansarullah publicly expressed its anti-imperialism. Simultaneously, leaders of Ansarullah, such as Sayyid Hussein al-Houthi, better aligned ideologically with the Islamic Republic of Iran. In a speech in 2001, during the commemoration of Al-Quds Day, an annual event established by Imam Khomeini for the liberation of Quds, Houthi emphasized the path of resistance against oppression and identified the United States regime as the main enemy of the Yemeni people. In 2002, al-Houthi himself introduced what has since become the group's slogan, "God is great, death to America, death to Israel, curse upon the Jews, victory for Islam." This slogan shares a discursive affinity with one of the most widely used slogans in Iran, "Marg bar America," translated as "death to America," actually meaning the American hegemony. Hence, it can be seen how Iran and Ansarullah express, in a shared Islamic tradition, the rejection of the naturalization of the presence of oppressive foreign forces in the region. Iranian officials have repeatedly asserted that the Yemeni government's actions in the Red Sea are not dictated by Tehran. It's a sovereign country that makes its own decisions.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Black and white.
Las fuerzas reaccionarias imperialistas siempre sacan cuentas alegres.
The imperialist reactionary forces always rush to rejoice. They think that by murdering and martyring the main leaders of the resistance, the fight of the people is over. They do not know the reality in Latin America.
No conocen la realidad. En América Latina tenemos muchos ejemplos.
We have many examples. The assassination of Zapata in Mexico, Sandino in Nicaragua, Commander Ernesto Che Guevara in Bolivia, and our comrade Salvador Allende in Chile.
Y a nuestro compañero Salvador Allende en Chile.
The reactionaries always claimed that this was the end of the struggle and the hope of the people for national liberation, democracy, and self-determination.
Y por tomar el destino en sus manos. Lo mismo hicieron hace ya 4 años atrás.
They did the same thing 4 years ago in Baghdad. The Americans, under the order of Donald Trump, a president who recognized that he gave the order of the assassination of Soleimani.
Soleimani, que era en ese instante el comandante, ¿no es cierto?, de la fuerza de la resistencia.
Who was at that moment the commander of the resistance forces, the articulator of the anti-Zionist and anti-imperialist resistance not only in Iran, but also in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Palestine, and Lebanon.
Liban. Pensaron que de esa manera la resistencia iba a desaparecer.
They thought that this way the resistance would disappear. They made excessively optimistic calculations. Today, Qasem Soleimani is more alive than ever, despite the fact that the reactionaries insist on liquidating his memory.
Atacan a mansalva colocando artefactos.
They attack in cold blood by placing explosive devices in an act of tribute and remembrance of Iranian people. 4 years after his murder, they murdered 93 people, leaving more than 300 injured, some critically.
Más de 300 heridos, algunos muy graves. La verdad es que ya.
The truth is that at this moment, there are already, according to the Islamic Republic of Iran, 96 Americans accused of the murder of Soleimani.
El asesinato de Soleimani. Bueno, pero los pueblos.
But the people have built a majestic Soleimani, as have been the other heroes at the international level who have fought against the imperialism that are still alive. Allende is alive. Che Guevara is alive. Soleimani also grows and becomes stronger in every struggle, in every resistance, in every mobilization, in every attack on the occupation forces in Palestine, on Zionism, on the Zionist entity and the fight to liberate from the river to the sea, the entire Palestinian land.
Desde el río al mar, toda la tierra palestina. Porque Soleimani.
Because Soleimani had the quality to understand that it was impossible to continue with the talks. And it was time for the resistance to speak, for the resistance of the people to speak, to hit the enemy.
Hablara para golpear al enemigo. Los enemigos sionistas norteamericanos crearon bandas.
The enemies, the Zionists and the North Americans, remained terrorist bands of Daesh, or what is called. The architect who marked the end of the band, or at least reducing them to the minimum expression, was precisely General Soleimani. The people, the countries that fight for democracy, for freedom, for self-determination, owe a lot to Soleimani.
Por la democracia, por la libertad, por la autodeterminación, le deben a Soleimani mucho, ya que se puso la cabeza.
Since he stood his head against the scourge of imperialism and Zionism, that was Daesh, Soleimani lives among the people. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Por Hispan TV, soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy, desde la República Argentina, tenemos.
Today we have a valuable guest from the Republic of Argentina, Kamel Gomez, member of the Islamic community and head of the Argentine Arab Union. He is a professor at the State University of Mar del Plata, Argentina. Kamel Gomez, welcome to Black and White.
Bienvenido, Kamel Gomez, a esto Negro y Blanco por Hispan TV.
How are you? Good evening from Argentina, Mar del Plata. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Camil, en las demandas populares, las demandas de las naciones, de soberanía, de independencia, significan unos sacrificios y unas luchas enormes.
Camil, people's demands about sovereignty and independence entail great sacrifices and struggles. And here, struggles produce exceptional leaders in a special direction. Here, we're talking about Soleimani, martyr Soleimani. In your opinion, what unique characteristics did he have that today he is remembered as the leader of the resistance throughout West Asia and at the same time as the architect of the defeat of Daesh?
Hoy día ser reconocido como el dirigente de la resistencia en toda Asia Occidental y al mismo tiempo como el artífice de lo que fue la derrota de ISIS o el Daesh.
Bueno, desde Indo-Afro-Latinoamérica es...
Well, from the indigenous African region of Latin America, talking about Qasem Soleimani has its strengths and weaknesses. The weak point of talking about a revolutionary leader, a martyr, is that he was in a remote area, but his news and developments are followed very closely. I would consider that region in Asia to be the heart of the Arab and Islamic world. But at the same time, there are strong points in this regard. These are not only related to Qasem Soleimani's strategic and geopolitical perspective, his ability to command and determine the fate of battles, but the main thing that our nations can understand is his deep spirituality. Many have talked about Qasem Soleimani's path and cited many characteristics from him. His first characteristic was that he was always present on the battlefield. He was not a general who would make decisions from place away from developments, away from military barracks. He was always present in the field. An example of this was the 2006 war in Lebanon, when Israel invaded. We can talk about the war against Daesh in Iraq. We always see that Qasem Soleimani is present and active, and he's leading the battles. This made us remember him as a very strong personality in the spiritual and moral dimension. Imagine that a great leader comes to Iraq to command the battles and has a decisive role and also knows the leaders. They talk together. Therefore, Qasem Soleimani listens to the conversations of the simplest soldier to the main commanders of military operations. And in this way, he was completely familiar with the developments in the field. His method was very different. It was not only analyses and texts and documents that guided him, but listening to everyone in the battle scene was one of his main characteristics, which in this way gained a very wide familiarity of what was happening on the scene. He was aware of the situation, of his forces, and above all, he knew about the enemy. One of the things that we usually hear about him is the capacity of his individual resistance. He had a strategic patience. This word is heard a lot these days in West Asia, especially in Iran, which is known as the axis of resistance. This strategic patience understands the times of struggle and the times of tactics and strategy, but also grants its followers a personal resistance. Those who had spent some time with Qasem Soleimani know well that he was a person who showed no signs of discontent, and if he even had personal pain or discomfort, he would deny it to be able to carry out his necessary responsibilities under different circumstances. Being a detail-oriented person is another interesting feature that those who knew him and quoted from him usually mention. He was in the details of every single issue, to the extent that he was said to be very influential in Russia's decision to intervene in Syria. In a meeting while some Russian military commanders had unanswered questions, according to Arab sources, Qasem Soleimani was the person who gave Putin assurance. Well, we don't want to claim that he would say what Putin should do. This is not our topic. But I want to point out the power of analysis, behavior, and method of presenting strategy and considerations regarding Russian intervention and non-intervention, which helped Vladimir Putin to make a decision regarding the developments in Syria in 2015. And without a doubt, he was known for his humility. Qasem Soleimani was not a general and a commander who was proud of his great victories and great battles. In fact, he was the kind of person who always tried his best not to be seen, and we insist on this topic. He paid a lot of attention to each of his fighters, beyond their military rank and role. And of course, we need to add that he had a great spiritual vision.
A todo esto sumémosles una gran visión espiritual.
Kamil, please, we will take a short break here and continue immediately.
Estamos con Kamel Gómez desde la República Argentina. Ya hicimos la presentación, que es un profesor, ¿no es cierto?, miembro de la comunidad islámica y al mismo tiempo presidente de la Unión Árabe Argentina. Kamel.
We are with Kamel Gómez from the Republic of Argentina. We introduced him. He's a professor and member of the Islamic community, and at the same time, he is the head of the Arab League of Argentina. Kamel, one of the characteristics of Qasem Soleimani that has helped a lot in confronting Zionism and North American imperialism in West Asia is that he has put the will of the people in the center of the scene. I mean, besides fighting spirit, weapons, military capability, and large military industries, production of modern and ultra-modern weapons, his main focus and concern has always been on the will of the people in the nations of the region, because it is clear that he had crossed the borders, Iran, Yemen, Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, and become one of the designers and organizers of resistance throughout West Asia.
Las fronteras, no, de Irán, Yemen, Líbano, Irak, Siria, y se transformó en uno de los articuladores y principales.
So what do you think about the idea that he had that it is the nations that make the decisions and not just the ultra-modern capability of military weapons? Please.
No, y no solamente la capacidad ultramoderna de los medios militares. Por favor.
Hay un libro del recientemente fallecido Kissinger que se llama Nuevo Orden Mundial.
There is a book by Kissinger who died recently called The New World Order. In this book, he analyzes Asian countries and has dedicated a chapter of the book to Iran. In that book, Kissinger asks that Iran should decide whether it is a country or a case. In response to this question, among other issues, the role of Soleimani is raised. Iran is a case, a revolutionary case, which today somehow guides the efforts of the majority of the Arab and Islamic nations in the region. If we see today, in these days and months, how Israel's strategic environment is completely messed up. One of the executors of this current situation is a person named Qasem Soleimani. Today, the Zionist regime is involved in several fronts. Let's think about Yemen, think about West Asia and Gaza, about South Lebanon, about Syria, and about Iraq. In all these fronts that I mentioned, the importance of Qasem Soleimani has been determined, and the world nations acknowledged it. And also, the importance of the Islamic Shia spiritual dimension of Qasem Soleimani cannot be denied. As he himself said clearly, let us note that spirituality is very important here. This is in contrast to the vast technological support that Israel enjoys today, which has spent over $60 billion against the Gaza Strip to date. And all it has done is kill and kill civilians. This strategy is the answer to this Western war machine and the cause of the decline of the West geopolitics, a strategy that has clearly outsmarted the American politics and realized that this policy will lead to failure. It has realized that this defeat must come at the hands of the resistance, an active part that prevents the realization of the goals of the U.S. and Israel in the region. We see this every day in Iraq. We see in Syria. And more importantly, this has blown the covers of America and Israel and the region for many times. Today, everyone knows that the U.S. government has created Daesh. There is no doubt that this terrorist organization has been reactivated and is trying to launch attacks again in Syria and recently in Iraq. But we see that behind all this, Qasem Soleimani could undoubtedly see the traces of the U.S. government regarding Daesh and the military support of the Zionist regime. Today, this is very clear for Iran and the axis of resistance that they should confront America's discourse in the region. Today, the U.S. government is completely in crisis and cannot impose its plans, and the reason why it can no longer impose its plans is mainly due to the Qasem Soleimani's views and its ties to all the nations that have decided to resist these plans.
Así
es, Camel. Sin lugar a duda, el sionismo es una construcción del imperialismo, ¿no? Y la suerte del mismo está en íntima relación con la suerte del imperialismo.
Yes, that's right, Camel. Undoubtedly, Zionism is the offspring of imperialism, and its fate is tied to the fate of imperialism. For this reason, observing this unity and understanding that the struggle is long, but the final result will be the victory of the nations, all the sacrifices being made are against the declining West and North American imperialism, which is also declining. Despite the multifaceted invasion, soft invasion in the field of culture, deep cultural invasion, in the political field, they say that the only way to understand democracy is the understanding of it in the West.
La agresión cultural es profunda. En lo político, planteando que la única forma de entender la democracia es como se entiende en Occidente, ¿no? En lo militar, sujetando a los países a sus tratados, sometiéndolos.
In the military field, they bring the countries under their own agreements and surrender them. And in the economic field, they turn the countries into colonial enterprises and prevent the sovereignty, governance, and freedom of the people and nations. Qasem Soleimani, in my opinion, understood this very deeply, that the structure of imperialism can only be defeated through the mobilization of nations. I don't know if you think the same or not.
Esta construcción del imperialismo solamente podía ser derrotada por la movilización de los pueblos. No sé cómo tú concuerdas con esta posición o no.
Es que es absolutamente clara y necesaria. Sin la fuerza...
It is quite clear and necessary. Today, without the strength of the nations, this resistance is impossible. During these days and months, we have seen this issue in Gaza and Lebanon. We've seen it in Syria and Iraq a few years ago. It is true that millions of people have been martyred. When we count the number of people who lost their lives, today the Arab and the Islamic world has the conditions that Algeria had in the past against France. And we can point to many examples in this regard. Even in other places like Vietnam, also the resistance of our nations in Latin America. It's always been this blood that has watered the seeds of resistance. And this issue cannot be included in the algorithm of American Zionist computers. They don't understand how possibly they could be defeated with so many weapons and ammunition and equipment and supports. It is complained that every day 10 children in Gaza lose at least one leg. This is something that happens on a daily basis. And there are many such examples, but the nation of Palestine resists. We must remember that when Qasem Soleimani was martyred in Baghdad, he was on a diplomatic mission. This diplomatic mission was related to bringing Saudi Arabia and Iran closer together. Years passed, and recently we saw the pictures that an agreement was reached between Saudi Arabia and Iran with the mediation of China. There is a long way ahead of us, but regarding imperial powers, I should say that the end is in sight. Now let's leave these things out of consideration.
Largo, sí, pero esta paciencia estratégica no hay que perderla de vista.
Así es. Nos queda un minuto. En este minuto...
Yes, that's right. We have 1 minute. In this 1 minute, along with the final words of today's program, we ask you to tell us about the vision of General Qasem Soleimani and his growing role in the struggle of the nations of the world, and specifically the nation of Palestine.
Soleimani en la lucha de los pueblos del mundo, particularmente del pueblo palestino.
Creo que en cada
I think that in the killings of every single child and woman in Israel's bombings, besides the deep pain that is undeniable, we can vividly see the signs of the frustration of the aging West in terms of geopolitics as they are siding with Israel's genocidal madness. And there is no other way left for them except to harm and kill indiscriminately. The vision is the project of resistance. The project of resistance belongs to free nations who resist, struggle, and are ready to sacrifice the most important asset of a human being, which is life. And these nations sacrifice their lives because they want to live with dignity, and they want to live by preserving their sovereignty, culture, past, and traditions. Because they don't want to abandon thousands of years of their history. We are talking about thousands of years of civilizations in Iran, which are even older than Islamic civilizations. We are talking about Persia. They don't want to give away their pride and lands like what we see in Palestine. I believe that Qasem Soleimani helped build an intelligent resistance against one of the worst enemies of humanity throughout history.
Muchas gracias, Kamel, por haber estado hoy día.
Thank you so much, Kamel, for being on our show today. And without a doubt, the nations will win. And the greatness of General Soleimani will create a school for us. Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you for your invitation.
In the limelight.
Palestinian people resort to extreme measures that have had adverse effects on their health due to intense Zionist regime bombing and food shortages. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, Palestinians in Gaza have been forced to resort to extreme measures amid growing starvation as a result of Israel's relentless bombardment and a full siege imposed since October. Many families across the besieged enclave had to mix various ingredients into flour to make bread using traditional methods due to the scarcity of food. Families have been forced to use animal fodder and bird feed baked into their bread, sometimes causing medical problems, particularly in young children. Abu Ala, an owner of a mill in central Gaza, said that the food available to people is indelible. He told Middle East Eye, "Something should be done about this urgently. People are mixing bird feed and animal food into their bread. This is not right. It's not healthy. People are grinding this and mixing it into their bread." He explained that this is happening due to a lack of aid deliveries as well as the sharp skyrocketing prices of goods that are available. Abu Ala says that he has been forced to reduce the price of wheat due to the dire circumstances, despite rising costs hitting everyone. Families wait in line for hours every day to get just a few pounds of flour. However, often by the time families get to the front of the queue, the flour would have already run out. Meanwhile, on many occasions, people are forced to scatter due to the Zionist regime's bombardment. According to a report by the UN in December, 93% of the people in Gaza are facing crisis levels of hunger, and a quarter of the population of the Gaza Strip faces catastrophic hunger and starvation. Recently, the World Food Programme, WFP, said in a statement that the entire population is acutely food insecure. More than a quarter of them, 500,000 people, are at IPC5, the most extreme stage of hunger. They are starving. Euromed Human Rights said that it had documented numerous deaths from starvation, including infants. Mixing animal feed into bread has already started to have adverse effects on people's health. However, despite this, families say they have no other alternative. Abu Anas, a local who lives near a mill, said that any food available in Gaza is no longer affordable, particularly after nearly all bakeries and supermarkets in the Gaza Strip have been bombed. Instead, families are using Stone Age techniques and makeshift ovens to make food and, if they have the means, sell it. Gaza residents are also pumping water from wells and mixing seawater and wastewater amid a shortage of clean water. Jaber, another local in Gaza, says that even if the taste is bad, he and others are mixing different types of flour and ingredients to make bread. He said, sometimes the bread is made and it comes out red and yellow because of the ingredients mixed in it, adding that this is not healthy. Ground barley and corn are also being mixed into the flour. In some cases, Palestinians have been forced to trawl through the ground to find scraps of food. Sabrin Al-Atani, 32, evacuated her house in Beit Lahia weeks ago after the Zionist regime airstrikes reduced it to rubble. She and her four children have been grappling with displacement and famine, she told MEE.